The owners of all 30 Major League Baseball teams are gathering in Baltimore today to elect the league's first new commissioner since Bud Selig took over in 1992. It's a contentious process that may not yield a result today, hasn't as far as we know now. One thing is clear, whoever takes the job next year will have a lot on their plate. Their home plate. Sorry.
Well, the sport continues to do well in the United States. There are long-term economic concerns facing the sport, including a possible labor stoppage in 2016 and a growing National Football League, which may be siphoning off some baseball fans. And in today's busy world, there are some people who say that baseball just isn't relevant anymore.
Joining us now to talk about the business of baseball and the challenges facing a new Major League commissioner is Andrew Zimbalist. He's a professor of economics at Smith College and expert on sports business. His new book is The Sabermetric Revolution, Assessing the Growth of Analytics in Baseball. Andrew, welcome to Central Time.
Thank you. Good to be with you.
So from the economic standpoint, what is the state of Major League Baseball?
You guys did a nice job there summarizing it. On the one hand, the sport has been growing approximately 9 or 10% a year since the mid-90s when we had our last work stoppage in baseball, the strike in 94 and 95. Revenue has continued to grow overall in the sport. It's been driven in the last 5 years largely by local television deals, regional sports networks. But there have been a lot of new stadiums that have been brought online, and we've had labor peace in baseball since the strike of 94-95. Baseball used to be the sport that had labor unrest, but since 94-95, been 22 years of, almost 20 years of labor peace, and the other sports have had disruption. So all of that's good news. The bad news is that the demographics of baseball's fandom is getting older and older. And the percent of youths in the United States who say baseball is their favorite sport has been falling. And obviously, going forward, you want to build as much of a fan base as you can amongst today's youngsters. It's the ability of youngsters to become adults and have kids and pass along the love of the sport that has kept baseball as the national pastime. And part of the problem, at least as perceived by many people within the industry, is that baseball takes too long. That the average game in the 1950s took about 2 hours, and today it takes about 3 hours. There's too much fidgeting and adjusting and hemming and hawing between each pitch. And, of course, the commercials have gotten a little bit longer as well. And people in today's world don't feel like sitting down and committing. It's an indefinite. It might be 3 hours on the average, but we don't know in baseball because it doesn't have a time clock and you could have extra innings. The game might be 3.5 or 4 or 4.5 hours. People are increasingly reluctant, it seems, to sit down and devote that much time of their evening or of their day to watching a baseball game. So there's a big debate within the ownership ranks about how they can move the game along more rapidly. It's not an easy thing to do, particularly since practically everything that you would do would have to be negotiated with the players' union.
Well, when it comes to these and some of the other challenges we're going to talk about, how important is the commissioner in all this?
Well, I think the commissioner is a central figure, and Bud Selig, of course, has been a central figure. Bud has not done very much to reduce the length of the games. And it's not going to be easy for anybody to reduce the length of the games, in part because of the fact that it all has to be negotiated with the players' union. But for anything positive to happen, anything constructive to happen, the commissioner has to play an agglutinizing role. The commissioner has to get all of the owners more or less on the same page. You've got 30 owners who are operating in different markets, usually vastly different economic markets, with spectacularly different conditions in terms of the number of large corporations, the size of the television market, the per capita income of the population, whether they own the stadium that they play in or not, and if they don't own it, what the lease terms are, the weather in the area. Every owner faces his or her own set of economic challenges, and because of that, each owner has their own idea about what needs to happen in baseball. And one of the things that was happening in baseball in 1992 when Bud took over as, at that point in time, a temporary commissioner, was that the owners were on each other's backs. They were screaming and hollering and kicking, and they couldn't even agree enough with each other to be able to sit down at the bargaining table with the players. Bud Selig was able to do is to say to the owners, look, we're destroying the sport. We've got to behave more like gentlemen. We have to look at not just our own backyards, but we have to look at the backyards of all 30 teams. And if we don't do that, we're going to be in big trouble. Now, Bud was able to use that approach, and he was able to use some carrots and some sticks, and he got the owners to at least agree with each other enough that they had to stop bickering to begin to do some long-term planning. And it was his ability to do that and to maintain that modicum of peace amongst the owners that enabled baseball to innovate. Innovation means that you're making changes for the future. And so baseball was able to introduce a third division. They were able to first introduce one wild card and then two wild cards. They were able to introduce the International Baseball Classic or the World Baseball Classic. They're able to introduce BAM, MLBAM, or MLB.com, which is now the internet leader in the sports field. They've done a lot of things that they would never have been able to do in the 1980s, given the level of discord that existed. So in order to be able to begin to productively think about the problem of how can we adjust baseball today to meet the needs and desires of the youth of America today, in order to begin to address that, you have to first have some unity of purpose and to begin to fashion some unity of vision. And I think that is the first challenge of a commissioner. A commissioner, you know, you might like to say, well, a commissioner should be handsome, a commissioner or beautiful, a commissioner should be articulate, a commissioner should have great charisma, a commissioner should be the most brilliant person ever to think about the television and media markets, and go on and on and on and on. You could say it would be wonderful if we had all of those characteristics. The fact of the matter is, to be a good leader, you need to get the people you're leading on the same page, number one. And then number two, you need to know where to go to find the experts. You need to engage in a constructive dialogue. The commissioner doesn't have to be an expert in television technology.
We're talking with sports economist Andrew Zimbalist about the business of baseball and what challenges await the league's new commissioner. And we want to hear from you, too.
In order to stay competitive, are there changes you think baseball needs to make? If you're not a fan of the game, is there anything that would win you over? Or would you like to see things stay just the way they are? Give us a call at 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
We're talking about the future of baseball. Major League Baseball is in the process of selecting a new commissioner for the league, replacing longtime baseball boss Bud Selig. While the game is still raking in a lot of dollars, there are questions surrounding the sport's long-term prospects.
You can join our conversation at 800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. New commissioner can mean new opportunities for baseball. Do you think baseball needs to change to stay competitive, maybe to fend off the NFL? Are there changes you think that baseball should make? If you're not a fan of the game, is there anything that could win you over? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And you can also post on the Central Time Facebook page.
Also wonder if maybe you used to like baseball, but some other sport has crowded it out in your affections. 800-642-1234 is the number to call. Well, getting back to our discussion, looking at this transition with Bud Selig, one of the challenges we mentioned earlier is the NFL. I had thought that the NFL was actually stealing business from baseball. Baseball's still on the rise, but is there a concern that football is going to keep growing, Andrew Zimbalist, while baseball might reach its peak and then start declining?
I don't think that baseball owners have that concern, and I certainly don't have that concern. I would almost express the concern the other way around, which is that I think football has a very large challenge before it, which is how to deal with concussions without changing the basic violent nature of the game. And there are no easy answers to that. You can't simply change the equipment because the equipment's not going to protect the collision that the brain makes with the inside of the skull. So we have increasing information about this as a problem in football. We have suits that start at the NFL level but go down to the college and high school level. We have increasing concern amongst parents about this. So I'm not predicting the demise of football, but I think football actually has a much larger challenge before it. And in any event, I don't think baseball defines its success in terms of the number of people who go to football games, or certainly the number of eyeballs that watch football on television. Football long ago surpassed baseball as a more popular television sport.
We'll go to our callers now. We've got Mike on the line in Adams. Mike, hi.
Hi, how you doing?
Good.
I just wanted to say that I found myself, anyway, veering more towards Major League Baseball, watching the Brewers and listening to the Brewers, and being kind of pulled away from the NFL as of late, like in the last few years.
Why is that?
I think a lot of it is the old, you know, how people have been talking about the oversaturation of the NFL and a lot of the changes they're making. It just seems to be getting kind of over the top and almost kind of cartoonish. I mean, I'm still a big Packers fan, but I really enjoy baseball more, and I like the fact that there's not a clock. I like, you know, just the pure fun of the game more.
Interesting. Mike, thanks a lot for the call. Andrew, he's liking the relaxed pace that some people are worried about. So some people out there don't have that attention span issue when it comes to baseball.
Absolutely, and I'm one of them, because for me, life in the United States has become increasingly frenetic. And one of the things I love about baseball is that it's so languorous. And either you go to the ballpark or you're watching on television, and it's 3 hours away from the freneticism of the rest of your life. So I find it relaxing. And certainly there are people out there like Mike and myself who believe that. I think, however, the concern is that if you look at the patterns amongst the youth, the people that the television audience that's below 18 years of age, you're finding a different experience and a different perception. So I think baseball would like to respond to that. And you know, there are some sensible ideas out there about limiting the amount of time that pitchers can take between pitchers, or restricting batters from stepping out of the batter's box in certain ways. Part of the problem, though, is that any such change is going to have to be negotiated with the union, and the union is representing players who have grown accustomed to a certain pace, and so it's simply not an easy thing to do.
One advantage people have pointed to for baseball is that it's substantially cheaper to go to a baseball game than any of the other big four sports in the country.
This is true. The average baseball ticket is somewhere in the neighborhood of $25 to $30, and the average ticket for basketball, football, and hockey is between $60 and $80. But the reason for that is that baseball plays twice as many games as hockey and basketball, and the baseball stadiums have capacities of 40 to 60,000, whereas basketball arenas have capacity of 15 to 20,000, more or less. And football, of course, they only play 8 regular season home games during the year, and hence the demand for tickets is that much greater than the available supply. If you're playing 8 games and there are 70,000 seats, there are only 560,000 tickets to sell, and so they can charge a lot more money for each ticket.
Back to our callers now with Bob in Waupaca. Hi, Bob.
Hi. My concern with baseball is this lack of competitiveness. I was an avid baseball fan in the 80s when the Brewers were competitive. But after the 1994 strike and the lack of a salary cap, institution of a salary cap, for the most part, the Brewers just became a minor league franchise where the good players ended up going other places. And I've basically turned off baseball since 1994. In football, any team can go from the cellar to the best. And any given year, it's happened multiple times, or from best to worst. And in baseball, it's basically just root against the Yankees or the other high-paid teams.
Bob, thanks a lot for the call. He's voicing a concern. He's not alone there, Andrew.
Yeah, that's correct, and particularly if you're a fan of a team that's been doing poorly for a long period of time. The Brewers basically fall into that category. The Pittsburgh Pirates until last year fell into that category. Other teams fall into that category. Then sure, you get tired. But you know, there have been longstanding terrible teams in all the other team sports as well. Baseball actually has more balance today than it's ever had, and you have more and more small market teams that are doing well. And it becomes harder and harder for teams like the Yankees or owners like Hal Steinbrenner to buy himself a World Series. The Yankees have had the highest payroll every year including this year, although it's very close to the Dodgers, for about the last 15 years. They've only won the World Series once since 2001, and as your caller Bob probably knows, they're not doing terribly well this year. So you have to be a little bit patient. You have 30 teams in baseball, and not every team is going to do well every year, but I think Mr. Attanasio has got the Brewers moving in the right direction. That said, underlying the problem of imbalance is revenue imbalance and market size imbalance, and one of the ways that has been implemented over the last 15 years to deal with that is revenue sharing, is to take money out of Hal Steinbrenner's pocket, the Yankees' pockets, and put it into Mark Attanasio's pocket. And that does happen in a big way. The Yankees contribute over $100 million a year in revenue sharing. That sort of thing is very hard to do because you're basically appealing to the Hal Steinbrenners of the baseball world and saying, look, we know we're taking money out of your wallet, but we need to do this in order to make the sport stronger. And Hal Steinbrenner's position will be, my goodness, isn't there another way to make the sport stronger? When my father bought the Yankees, nobody told us they were going to take half of our money away from us. It's actually not quite that bad for the Yankees. But anyway, competitive balance will always be an issue in baseball. It's an issue in the other sports as well. But it's simply not an easy, it's not an easy nut to crack.
We'll leave it there for now. Andrew, thanks so much for joining us today.
My pleasure.
We've been talking to Andrew Zimbalist. He's a professor of economics at Smith College, an expert on sports business. His new book is The Sabermetric Revolution. And by the way, you can keep this conversation going. Tell us of why you love or maybe fell out of love with Major League Baseball over at the Central Time Facebook page.